Welcome everyone back to the annual 25 or 33, it depends which poster you saw, of the things to say on the things to say on the at the Seder or on the Haggadah, also depends on which poster you saw. Might be Haggadah or Seder. And we did it, it's not going to be a repeat of anything. People are asking, is it the same as from last year? We're not going to repeat any Divrei Torah. I'll only repeat if there's some new twist to add to it, but other than that, we are not going to add anything, repeat anything. Okay, let's begin. We'll try to go through as many as possible. I'll come back around the cycle if time permitting. Okay, first idea. We start off opening the Seder. This is from Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev said at the Seder, there's a story he told where he asked someone at the Seder, can you quickly go find me this illegal tobacco or whatever it was? Who knows? So the chassid went and immediately came back with the legal tobacco. Next he asked another chassid, could you go find for me some of this, there's a certain type of, legal item that you can't buy anywhere. Can you be able to find that for me? Chassid came back within 15 minutes, was able to find it. Then he turns to another chassid and said, could you find me some of that chametz that we got? Any chametz anywhere? Chassid searched and searched and couldn't find a single bit of chametz. And Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev says to God, God, who's always known as the defender of the Jewish people, God, look at your people. They're always able to find anything anywhere, just like anybody can. But if you ask them to find a morsel of chametz in their homes in the Pesach, no way, no one could find it, no Jew could find it. All right, be careful where you say that one. All right, next.
He was testing to see who was a criminal.
All right, who knows?
But that was the punchline.
That's your own shot, okay. Fine, let's begin. This comes from Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner is a big dayan, a judge, and a rav in Bnei Brak. It's in his commentary on a book on Chanukah. And he says, why is buying Chanukah candles and the four cups the only thing that a poor person has to sell their clothes for to get? It's the only thing in the Old Torah that a poor person has to sell their clothes for to get. Chanukah candles and the four cups. As opposed to anything else. He says, because the following idea, beautiful message. The reason is because the poor person must hear the message that really in the middle of their darkest time, in the middle of their darkest time, in the Choshech HaGalus, Hashem brings light. That's the idea of Chanukah, bringing a light, and it's the idea of the four cups, which celebrate Pirsumei Nisa. Literally, while you're holding the red wine, which symbolizes the blood, in the moment when things are most difficult in your life, you're going to find that salvation for yourself. So the poor person needs to learn this, that they may feel that all their hope is lost, but learn and see, when you think you're at your most desperate, that's when your Yeshua comes. That's when your salvation comes. That comes from Rav Vosner in his commentary to Chanukah. Okay, that's a introductory comment. You could use it also on the four cups, and you could use it also to Kol Dichvin when you invite the poor. Okay, next. This comes from the Alekach Valavuv. It's an interesting sefer on the Parsha, and in there he throws in a little idea on the Haggadah. This comes, you could use it, the Urchatz section of the Haggadah. And it goes like this. He says that what's this Lashon of Racha, right? Rachatz, Kadesh Urchatz. What's the Rachatz over here? We always have washing before a meal. We don't give it a whole title. What's this Rachatz? So he says, you know what the root of the word is? It's not from washing. That's the mistake. It comes from, you know when you take out the Sefer Torah, you say the Brich Shemei, that paragraph over there from the Zohar? There's a line in there, Bei Ana Rachitz. Bei Ana Rachitz. Rachatz comes from that. Urchatz comes from that. From the word Rachitz in the Zohar. What does Rachitz mean? Rachitz means, if you look at the English article, even has it this way, it means that in you, we put our trust. That in God, we put our trust. That we trust that we're going to go into the Seder, says the Lekach V'Levuv. We trust that we're going to go into the Seder and we're going to come out different than we were before. We're going to come out impacted. We trust that what we do tonight is going to make a difference in this world, going to make a difference for our family, is going to make a difference for ourselves. And that's the idea of Urchatz, not from washing. It's not the real washing is even before the meal, later on. It's Rachatz from trust. We show God our trust in you. Okay, next idea. Let's talk about Karpas. Okay, Karpas. We always talk about karpas as one of those things when you ask, what's the reason for the dipping the vegetable, right? What's the reason behind it? And the Gemara says, just so the kids should ask. So with everything at the Seder, it's like, what's the reason? We want to know, bottom line, what's the reason for it? So the Beis HaLevi, the Brisker, remember, each of these are hopefully will give you a different style. Some Hasidic, some Brisker, some modern ideas. So this one comes from the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi says the following idea. He says, in this world, there are causes and there are effects. There are causes and effects. From our perception, sometimes it seems when we're looking at the effect, that that's the effect and not really the cause or the reason. I'll give you an example. For example, you'll see that there's an accident. The reason the accident happened is because someone by accident fell asleep at the wheel. There's a cause and that's the effect is the accident. So he says, so the classic example the Beis Halevi gives, and this is in his commentary on Parshas Miketz, is that Yosef, Paro had this dream. Paro has this dream, and that was the cause, and the effect was that because of it, Yosef's able to come out of prison and then do his thing, and he becomes a big shot, and the whole history continues. Says the Beis Halevi, that's just off from our perception. It's an incorrect perception. The cause is that God was saying, now it's time for Yosef to work his marvel. Therefore, the effect is, I'll make sure Paro has a dream. It's not that because Paro had a dream, Yosef then woke up and says, I could do something. It's because God says, now it's time for Yosef to do something, I'm going to make sure Paro has a dream. The Torah's cause and effect is sometimes the opposite from what we think it is. So says the Beis Halevi likewise in his commentary to Parshas Bo. And this brings us back to the night of the Seder. He says, Gam Avram Avinu b'chola avas kimo Torah kula achlo nisdol. Let's continue. We always think all these mitzvahs, why do we do them? Because God took us out of Egypt. Because God took us out of Egypt. It's wrong. You know why we do them? If anybody wants to know why we do them because God wants us to do the mitzvahs. God took us out of Egypt so that we could do the mitzvahs. It's not that because we got taken out of Egypt, we do all these things to remember that we came out of Egypt. We were only taken out of Egypt because God says, I want these people to do these mitzvahs. I want these people to do these actions. For whatever reason, I want them to do these actions. So you know how I'm going to make that happen? I'll take them out of Egypt. The cause then was the mitzvahs. The effect was, therefore, they had to come out of Egypt. It's reverse. And behind all these ideas, we may say it's to wake the kids up, or that we give all these reasons from the Haggadah. But the Karpas is telling us, is illustrating this idea. We know the Dvar Torah from last year. Karpas goes back to Yosef. It was one of the colors in his coat. I'm not going to do the Dvar Torah again. But the point is, you see that the Seder is the reason itself. The fact that we're here, sitting here, doing these mitzvahs, that is the reason. And therefore, the effect was, because of it, God took us out of Egypt. Okay, let's talk one more about the Karpas. This comes from the Alexander Rebbe, the Yismach Yisrael, the Alexander Rebbe. Okay, this is our fourth Dvar Torah, I think, tonight. He says that, Ki b'chol hashana, ha-karpas, this is a nice one, the vegetable is probably the most shvach thing at a table from people's perspective. You know, the main, you get to your meat, right? You get to your meat. Yeah, be careful, some vegetarians here. The vegetables for most people, secondary in front of them. It's the tuffel. It's, you know, you take a side of vegetables. You don't get a side of meat. You take, right? It's the opposite. So therefore, he says, Ulam balayla zeh. But on this night, the karpas takes on a chashivas gedola, a great importance that it's put there front and center. What's that there to teach you? Lilamdenu, to teach us. Even though someone who the whole year might have found themselves always second, the leftover, also ran, insignificant, walked on. On this night, you're elevated to the top. So that's a beautiful idea. The Karpas is teaching you, which people take less seriously, the vegetable. Oh, on the night of Pesach, it's bumped to the top of the Seder. It's the first thing you're going to, after the Kiddush, you put in the mouth. It's to teach you that even those who might have felt low and secondary the whole year, tonight you become primary. Tonight you become kings. Okay, let's continue. Next, number five. That's from the Alexander Rebbe, the Yismach Yisrael, Alexander Rebbe. Now, we invite the poor into the house, right? We say, Kol dichvin yesev yechal, whoever wants, come and eat. Right? Whoever wants, come and eat. So the question is, why a specific invite to the poor? Why a specific invite to the poor? Why do you need that over here? So the Zohar to Parshas Balak says the following. The Zohar to Parshas Balak says that a poor man's prayer takes precedent even before that of Moshe and King David. A poor person's prayer comes before even a prayer of Moshe and David before God. The source for that, by the way, if you're not going to use the Zohar, the source for that is really Tehillim Kuf Beis. Psalms 102 basically says the same thing over there. And therefore, this could be why. We start our evening because we know the best way to get things up there, up to God, the best way to get things up there is to start with the poor person in there. And this ties, you could tie this in nicely to a beautiful Dvar Torah I heard from Rav Pinto. The older Rav Pinto said, why is it called lechem oni, poor man's bread, right? Lechem oni, it's not oni from poor. Yes, that's one explanation. But oni from being answered. It's the bread by which we get all our prayers answered by. And therefore, you put it, this Dvar Torah, you can have a nice fit, is because that the poor person is the one who gets their prayers answered first before Moshe and before King David. And then we could tie that with the following idea. Maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu isn't in the Haggadah. Moshe is not your best person to get the prayers answered. As amazing and powerful as Moshe is, you start with the poor person tonight, not with Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the famous answer. He is there. Everyone's pointing, where's Moshe in Haggadah? But it's only he's quoted because of a pasuk. He's not talked about. That's the answer to that point that he isn't there. Okay, good. Now, next Dvar Torah on Halach Ma'anya. We say, right, this is the poor man's bread. Halach Ma'anya. This Dvar Torah comes from Rabbi Menachem Genak at the OU. And also, he was a student of Rav Soloveitchik. So he says, B'tchilas ha'agadah shal Pesach Omrim. At the beginning of Pesach, the Haggadah, we say, Halach Ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread, which we our fathers ate in Egypt. Whoever's hungry, come and eat. Whoever wants, come and do the Pesach. Hashta hacha. Now we're here. L'shana haba ba'arad Yisrael. In the future, we're going to be in Israel. Now we're slaves. In the future, we're going to be B'nai Chorin. So that's what we say at the beginning. So he says, what's this doing here? What's this doing here? You know what this is doing at the beginning of the Seder? He says the following. De'eich yecholim anu l'kayim et kol mitzvah haggadah v'derech malachim v'aseva. How could we fulfill the whole Haggadah leaning derech cheirus and like angels and like kings? Sharei hachush machish, you feel it. The majority of the years that the Jews celebrate Pesach, they're not kings and they're not angels. They're actually downtrodden. They're actually in trouble. They're actually running from something. They're actually oppressed. So how are we supposed to feel this way? So it seems like he says, V'chein kol ha-seder ela ina tekes be'alma. Turns out the whole seder is just a tekes. It's a show. It's like a ceremony. That's it. Because we're not free. Most of the years the Jews are not free. Therefore, the Baal HaGadah wants to answer that anu, externally we may be slaves, but internally we're free. Why? Because we know we're getting out next year. He says it's like someone who's in prison. Who's more free? The person who's in prison, who's up for parole in 2 weeks and knows it's going to go through, or the person who's still at home watching TV knowing that they're going into prison in 2 weeks from now? Who's the free person there? The free person is the one getting out. He says, that's the position. You start off with the emunah, with the faith, that next year we're getting out. And if you start with that concept, we're getting out, then even right now, while you're in the middle of the worst situation, you're already free. Reminds me of the story of one of the Rothschilds. One of the Rothschilds was smuggling money into old Palestine, into Israel. He was smuggling money in, and he had to take there was a train that he took to get in. And while there, he knew he was going to be robbed. On the way, it was an uncultivated area, bandits everywhere. So what did he do? He decided he's going to dress himself like a pauper, the worst rags ever. He's going to make sure he smelled. He soaked it in urine. He did whatever he could. He put it all on himself. He got there, and on there, people were like cursing him, disgusting, spitting on him, you peasant, you vile, disgusting person. But inside, he was smiling. Because he knew that what he was doing was, he was the wealthiest man there. He was bringing money to Israel. And therefore, on the outside, he was looked dejected. On the inside, he was freer than ever. Okay, that's that Dvar Torah. Now, fine, let's go next. Here we go. This comes from, Rav Aaron of Karlin, the Karlina Rebbe. It says in many of the Haggadahs, most of the Haggadahs, right before the, you know, when the Manishtana begins, it says the words, V'kan haben shoel me'aviv. Here, the son asks the father. Here, the child asks the father. That's what it says there. So he says, what is this? This is not talking to the kids. This is not instruction to the kids. The kids know what to do. Or, the kids are not going to read the instructions in the Haggadah anyway. Who's this for? This is for us. This is for adults. It's now time for you to begin asking God. V'kan haben shoel me'aviv. Now the child asks of their parent. It's us, the Jewish people, asking of God for something. Ulevakish me'aviv shebashemayim kol hitzrachuso me'avin hein baruch nios hein gashmis. Anything spiritual or anything physical. Now's the time to ask it. This is what it's a message to us. It's not a message to the children. Okay, next. The problem is, if you look at the pasuk that's quoted, the verse that's quoted for the child that does not know how to ask a question, is the same verse that's quoted in response to the Rasha. Everyone points out how the question is similar for the wicked and the tzaddik. Forget that, this is a different question. This question is, if you look at the response, the verse that's quoted is the exact same for the wicked person and the kid who doesn't know how to ask. And we're equating the two? Nebuch, this kid doesn't know how to ask. So I thought the possible solution could be suggested. That the pasuk might very well be the same. It's ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li. That for me Hashem did this. But the takeaway message is different. If you look at the answer, the takeaway message after the pasuk is quoted is different. It says, li velo lo. That's only added by the wicked person. That it was done for me and not for him. Li velo lo by the Rasha. What's that teaching you? The same answer could be given to the She'eni Yodei Lishol and to the Rasha. But at the end of the day, what makes someone a Rasha? The fact that they heard the same thing in class as somebody else and they walked away with the negative message. That's the difference between the two. It's not that the answers need to be different. It's that they heard the same exact thing. They've been through the same exact thing. They've been through the same experiences. And everything that comes up, they have to find a negative reason for it. They have to find a contrarian reason for everything that comes up. The same kid walked away with the positive experience. The other one walked away with the negative. That's the difference between the two. Okay, next of our Torah. This one comes, I just saw a sefer on my desk, someone gave me of Rav Yishaya Pinto. I think he's the one in the area from over here. So he says as follows, this is page 130 in his commentary in the Haggadah, that you have the four sons, right? You have the four children. And he says it's really alluding to four generations. Very creative approach, unique. The wise is the matriarch or the patriarch of the family. The father or the mother of the family who is following the path of his, you know, grandfather, grandmother, great-grandmother, great-grandfather, his tradition. That's the Chacham. Next you have the wicked, the son who turns his back on his father, right? Who says, I'm finished. Walks away, turns away. That's the Rasha. Then the son of the wicked, which is now the grandchild, the son of the wicked is now the Tam. Because when he sees his grandfather, he asks simple questions. Like, why are you wearing that thing over you, that white thing that you're wearing? What is this? Like, what am I doing now? Why is our hands in water? He's so out of it. She's so out of it. He hasn't been to day school or anything. No yeshiva, no day school. He's totally out of it. And then you take the next level after that, level four, which is the She'eni Yodei Lishol. Then there's already the next generation who doesn't even come to the Seder and therefore doesn't even know to ask why anything is going on. She'eni Yodei Lishol, it's already the theory. It's sociology. It's called the theory of the severed flower. You could have one generation that says, I'm going to follow my culture and my heritage, but I don't really believe this stuff. That gives you one good generation. After that, you could say goodbye, Charlie. And the fourth generation, unfortunately, is the kid who's Eini Dei Lishol. Doesn't even know that there's any questions to ask, and is not even there. Okay, next. We say we blunt the teeth, right? You knock the teeth of the wicked. The actual language is Hakeat Shinov. Hakeat Shinov. What does that mean? How do you give a nice... Every year we try to figure out how to give a nice twist on that line. What are you punching people's mouths later? Hakeat Shinov. So the truth is, it's a very strange language. That's never the language we use for hit. Hakeat. With hey, kuf, hey, hey. So what does that mean, Hakeat Shinov? Hakeat, if you look in the Talmud, Hakeat means hikia. Means to... You know what that means, hikia? Means to spit up. Hakeat means to spit... In that grammar form, it means to cause to spit up at Shinov. You know what Shinov is? Shinuyov. Shinuyov means his changes. His innovations. What that means is, this wicked person has come to the table saying, let's change everything. Let's get rid of everything. Let's get rid of this Judaism. Let's modernize the whole thing. I want to give this whole thing a makeover. So you know what you do? Hakeat Shinov. You get him to, what?
But this is Hakeat, this is Aleph, not the Hey
Hey. The root is still the Hey and the Kuf. You have it all the time in Chas. The hay and the kuf is the root hakeh. That sound hakeh means to throw something back up, to regurgitate it. So you could look at this one in two ways. You could say that, you know how you can get someone to, you can get someone to quit smoking and you make them smoke 4,000 cigarettes in one shot. You overindulge. Get into spit. Hakeh shinov. Get into projectile. Get whatever you want to say. Whatever your conclusion and takeaway is, I'm just saying, use this play on words. Hakeh, which means to spit up from the Talmud, and at shinov, his changes, his innovations. Okay, let's leave that aside for now. Next. We say in the Haggadah, Afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, mitzvah aleinu lesaper. Even if we're all wise, even if we know everything, we still have a mitzvah to say over the Haggadah. Right? Afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu. This is, by the way, a good part to start doing Divrei Torah. Because now you're starting to, the Seder's begun, and now the rhythm's beginning. So I think, by the time you get to the meal, no one wants to hear from you anymore. So, but we're still going to have Divrei Torah from there. But I think this is actually every kid's going to have stuff already, or people who come to the Seder on the early stuff. Now is the part where you can actually get a starring role. So afilu kulanu chacham. What does this mean? So there's always a famous discussion about the difference between remembering Egypt the whole year, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach night. Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So this comes from Rav Asher Weiss in his Minchas Asher Haggadah. They just translated it last year. And he says, what does this mean? He says, the whole year, our obligation is to remember and to know that God took us out of Egypt. We have to remember, so that we know. But on Seder night, the mitzvah is for us to feel. To feel. Not to know, to feel. With that in mind, he says, now we know why it's telling us, even if you're wise and if you're smart, you need to talk about it. Why? They know everything already. They know everything. They got every Haggadah out there. They've listened to this shir the last 4 years. They know every Dvar Torah. You can't stump them. What do they got to learn anymore for? You know why they got to learn more? Because it's not about telling or remembering. We know you know it all. Can you feel tonight? Now it's about Hargusha, the feelings of the Seder. And this ties in, by the way, Dvar Torah from 2 years ago, we said from the Bubba Varebi. Why do you break the middle matzah before you tell the story? So that everyone should feel like they're incomplete and don't have the whole picture. No matter how much you know, you're still missing something. Someone else here could shed light on something that you're missing. Okay. Yes. Which part? The last part or the first part? Minchas Asher of Asher Weiss, last part, the Bubba Varebi.
How do you tie Sipur with Hargusha?
Well, that's the telling. Meaning, Zechira is a mental game. You need to know. Why are you Sipur is like a story. Sipur is this telling of a story. What's the point of a story? Rabbi Nachman says the purpose of a story is to awaken somebody from their sleep. You're waking them up. It's a feeling idea. Okay, next idea. Then we get to the part where there's a story of Maisa Rabbi Lazar, where the story of Rabbi Lazar, where all these rabbis were sitting in Bnei Brak. Okay, all these rabbis were sitting telling over the story in Bnei Brak. Okay, and there's a lot to be said on this. I'll give you a new twist on it. This comes from Rav Reuven Margolius. He has a Haggadah, the Haggadah of Rav Reuven Margolius. Reuven Margolius was a librarian, and he had a photographic memory, a huge Talmud Chacham. Everything that came is what he just memorized. And because of that, he wrote a lot, just like encyclopedic information. So Rav Reuven Margolius in his Haggadah says, what were they all doing in Bnei Brak? Rav Eliezer lived in Lod, and he's the Rebbe. Aren't you supposed to go to the Rebbe's house? You make the Rebbe schlep in from a load into Bnei Brak. Why did he go to them? So he answers like this. He says, this group of rabbis were the leaders in their communities. They used to go to Rome to argue to the Caesar many of the Jewish issues. They were the ones who were the emissaries, and the Gemara talks about how the Rabbanim sitting there at the Seder were the ones who were the delegates to go on behalf of the Jewish community. Okay, if they always went to Rome to argue at least once a year on behalf of the Jewish community, whatever it was for anti-Semitism, whatever else they were lobbying for, what's the port they came back in on when they got their boat back in? What's the closest port? Yafo. If they came in through Yafo, the closest city then is Bnei Brak, where the rabbis were. The closest city nearby is Bnei Brak. So interesting technical geographic Dvar Torah, why they were there in Bnei Brak. The Aruch HaShulchan Haggadah gives a different twist. He asks the same question, and he says, what were they doing there? He says, this was the time of the Hadrianic rule. Hadrianic rule was a terrible time for the Jewish people. It was not a treat. And among the times in our history when it wasn't a treat, this was one of the most not a treat. So the question was, how are they going to have a simcha? How are they going to have joy at the Seder? Such a terrible time like this. So whose house do they go to? You know who lived in Bnei Brak? You know whose house they went to? They went over Rabbi Akiva's house. Rabbi Akiva, if you learn the end of Makos, was the authority on seeing the light in the moments of darkness. He's the one who was smiling and laughing at the end of the Gemara when a fox was walking by where the temple was destroyed. He was smiling. And they asked him, what's he smiling about? Because he knows that when it gets its worst, that's a sign that the good is going to come. So these rabbis, why did they go to Rabbi Akiva's house in Bnei Brak? They went to him because he's the master. He's the authority on how to find simcha in the middle of darkness. That's the Aruch HaShulchan. That's the Aruch HaShulchan's idea. Okay, let's continue along. I think we've done 14 or 15 so far. Let's keep moving. Okay, then we say Baruch HaMakom, right? Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shanasan. Blessed is the Makom Hashem, blessed is He. And then you say, Baruch Shanasana Satorah, Baruch that He gave us the Torah. Okay, this is soon after you have the four children, you have Baruch HaMakom. So the question is, one, what's the connection between Baruch HaMakom and the four sons? Number two, why refer to God as HaMakom, which technically means the place? And why do we repeat Baruch HaMakom, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu? The tune that we have came after they wrote that. So why did they build that in there like that to be phrased in that way? Why Makom? So the Nefesh HaChaim, he was one of the most important students of the Vilna Gaon. Rav Chaim Volozhin says, God is the Makomo Shel Olam. He is the place of the world. From God's perspective, Mitzido, from his perspective, There's nothing else in the world besides God. He is the makom. He's the place. God's everything. Now, take that, minimize that for a second. Rav Tzadok HaKohen, the great, the holy Kohen, the Hasidic Kohen, Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, he adds two more questions to the mix here. One of the kids here is a wicked kid, is a Russia. Why are we belting out, oh, thank God. You have a wicked kid over here. You should be crying that your kid left the path. What are you singing, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu? And question number five, after the question of the wicked in the Torah, it says, V'yikod ba'am v'yishtachavu, that the people bowed, right? They danced, they bowed, they prostrated themselves. And Rashi says, Al besuras tova sabonim. Why do they bow in gratitude? For the good news about their children. What? The context is the wicked kid over here. So you're dancing now? And what good news over there? What good news is there over here? So Rav Tzadok HaKohen Ublin says the following. What a beautiful idea. The idea here is, no matter how far a Jew can go, they still could find a spot in the Torah. That's Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Shenasan HaTorah. Baruch HaMakom means, because if you realize the whole world is God's space, just because the kid's not sitting in the base medrash, just because the kid might not be in shul right now, just because the kid's not attending all the family simchas, the whole world is God's space. And one day the kid will figure that out. Baruch HaMakom and Baruch Shenasan HaTorah. The Kutzker has a great line. The Kutzker says, no matter how far a Jew falls, he still falls in God's lap. No matter how far, it's a fabulous line. No matter how far a Jew falls, he still falls in God's lap.
Who said that?
That's the Kutzker. Kutzker says that. So yeah, Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Tzadok HaKohen Ublin, and you close it with the Kutzker. Okay. Fine, a variation or different Bar Torah is, I heard from Rav Waxman, Musar Shmuz this year. Rav Waxman says on the line in the Haggadah, Baruch Shenasan Torah. Right? Baruch Shenasan Torah. Blessed that you gave the Torah. Why are we making the Birkas HaTorah right now? That's like the blessing we say before getting up to read the Torah or before learning Torah in the morning. Baruch Shenasan Torah. Why are we making a bracha right now in Torah learning? And what does it have to do with the four kids? So he gave an analogy. Two people. They're in town trying to figure out which one is the richest. After 5 million, they're still going one for one. I got more. They're adding up all their assets. They're both rich, right? No. One has more, one has less. And it's going to drive them crazy. And the two will be in competition till one has more than the other, clearly without any shadow of a doubt. So Rav Waxman said that's not the case here. Here, all four kids are rich. They're at the Seder. And the Torah is given to each and every single individual at the level they're on. The Torah was not meant just for the elite. It's not just meant for an elitist group of rabbis. Maybe the rabbis could teach it, but the rabbis are not the one to hold on to the Torah. The Torah was meant for everybody, whether you're wise, whether you're simple, whether you're wicked, whether you're good, it's for everyone. And that's the Baruch Shenasan HaTorah. The fact that it's here and it's accessible, we all share this wealth with each other. It's a treasure for each of us, no matter how much we know, no matter how much Torah we have access to. Okay, let's continue. You have the idea of Ma'avodah Zos Lachem. Right, where he says, what's this avoda to you? You know, what's this all to you? What are you doing this for? Maha avoda zos lachem. Do you think, so the Ishbitzer reads the line like this. The holy Ishbitzer reads like this. Do you think God cares about those stupid details? You think just because an esrog has a hole in it, you've done something wrong? You think God cares about these things? So, maha avoda zos lachem. What's this? What do you guys make yourselves crazy? You turn it into a whole avoda. You took a nice thing and you made it into all these details. You think God cares about these little things? So therefore, Baruch HaMakom, says the Ishbitzer. Makom means space. God has room for every little concern that we have. That's a makom. Makom means is that don't sell God short. That God may only just care about these big sweeping things. God has space for every little one of our concerns. Detailed halacha or detailed issues in our lives. Every little concern God has room for. Okay, a psychological vort, if you want to take it over here. I heard once, this goes back to something we said a couple years ago. Rav Riskin said that the four children at the Seder, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Ben Yishol, all of them, they represent four parts of our own personality. They're four parts of our own personality. So on a twist of that, I was thinking maybe this relates to the idea of the, it's not Freud, it's already post-Freud, archetypes. You know what archetypes are? How when someone wants to come...
Young.
What? Yeah, Jung developed the idea of... Jung actually had four archetypes. So when you want to come out of a certain, you know, thing that's limiting you, you take on the role of different archetypes in order to come out of them. There's the warrior, the magician, the lover, and the goddess. Those are the four archetypes. The warrior means you break out of self-pity and you become aware of your resources. Then you turn into the magician. You have to imagine yourself as the magician. You allow your realize your ability to alter emotional states at will, whenever you want. That's the magician. So we're given these four archetypes to help us get out of any limiting psychological factor that we're in. So it could be that these four children at the Seder are really these four archetypes that were supposed to play each role in order to be able to break out of that which was limiting for us. That the Rav Tzadok Kohen says there is a role for the Russia within us. There is a role for that need to rebel. When something's bothering you, you have to get up and say, I disagree with that answer. I disagree with that approach. You have to be willing to scream and say, something's wrong here. Each one of them is a different manifestation of our personality that needs to emerge on the Pesach night and scream. Whether it's the Tam, sometimes you need to be simple. Sometimes you just need to approach things the way they are without making them bigger than they are. Then you take it from the vantage point of Shein Delishol, the one who doesn't know how to ask. I need your help. The one who's dependent. And then you become Chacham, who's not dependent, who's active, who's wise. And then you take the Russia, who's a fire, who's a fireball, who uses that passion, that energy. You take all four, and then you have the archetypes of the Seder. Okay, let's keep moving.
What was
the warrior, the magician?
The warrior, the magician, the lover, and the goddess.
That's Joseph Campbell, not...
All right. If he's... We'll give... Then, right. Maybe Gulal Olam. You have to quote the right person. Kola Amar Darvish Shem Omro. Whoever quotes the thing in the name of the person it's from, you bring Gula into the world. So we're going to bring Gula for Joseph Campbell. Okay.
Campbell.
Here we go.
I studied with him in Sarah Lawrence.
Okay. All right, so we don't want to bring Gula through him. All right, the Gula come through anybody. That's what, by the way, when they asked Rav Kook why he accepts Zionism with open arms like this, don't you see there are blatant sinners that are sinning everywhere, and yet you give so much love and honor to them and everything. So he says, don't you see that God could bring the redemption either through righteous people or either through people that are not righteous? It can come in any way. So that's maybe Gulam could happen, Gulolam could happen from anyone. All right, let's continue. Vilna Gaon, here we go. It'd be too heavy for Vilna Gaon right now. Let's push it aside. You want a Vilna Gaon? Give Mr. Banks. You want a Vilna Gaon? All right. Okay. All right. Only be fair. You're right. I'll give you a little grow. Okay. Grow the Minchas Asher. Good. Okay. So this comes from, we go way back to Parshas Miketz. So it says that, the Vilna Gaon says as follows. HaKavani ki Rivka hodia li Yaakov v'zeh, shelo yavo alav tzaras nosefes, ki im shlosh eil haramels, Nimalahainu. She was telling Yaakov, just do this thing over here where you switch around the birthright, it'll be on me. Okay? It's gonna be on me, Alai, and it's gonna be on me. And now that what's that? Huh? It's his Gra on Miketz. The Gra on me is commentary to Miketz is where he says this idea that where she said to him, basically to Yaakov, that whatever you go through is going to be on me. It's Perek Membeis, Pasuk Lamed Vav. So now in the Haggadah Minchas Asher, he says like this, Libi Amar Li, my heart tells me, Degam Shloshas Eila, Esav Lavan V'Yosef, Yitzira Heim Lebnei Yaakov L'Doraseim, K'chol Maisa Avos Shehem Yitzira Labanim, Uma She'ira LeYaakov, Nigzer Alav, Nigzer Gam Alzaro V'chol Dor V'Dor. Zeg Zeres Esav, Shzim Laharugas Yaakov Avinu, Ach Yesh V'Nigzal Gzeres Shmat. Each time there was a Gzera, this is a beautiful idea, each time there was a Gzera against Yaakov to get him, but each time it was repelled. How was it repelled? Because the bracha of Rivka. Rivka said, it's on me. I'll comp you these three. You do what I need you to do, I'll protect you three times. Where are the three times? It's the Gzera of Esav, the Gzera of Lavan, Ha'arami, Lavan, and then it's going to play out in your great-great-grandchild, it's going to play out in your great, it's going to play out in your son, it's going to play out through Yosef. They're going to want to throw him in prison, they're going to want to kill him, I will take care of him. That's Rivka's three times, okay? That's what the Vilna Gaon says. It's going to be Alai, Alai, Alai. It's going to be on me. Vilna Gaon says it's going to show up three times. Minchas Asher says, these three protections, and he closed it like this, Va'od, we still suffer and we still feel this tension of them coming at us for what happened. Esav still coming at us and Rivka still standing there to block it. Mikulam, the hardest one is the Gzeres Yosef, though. The effect, though, of Yosef is the hardest of the three. The Sinas Achim, the hatred of the brothers, is the thorn that still lasts in this day. And therefore, Ubizman Shi Yisrael Baguda Achas, Ein Kol Uma V'Lashon Yechol Shavim. Meaning like this, Rivka stands to protect us in every generation. That's why you have at the Seder, Arami Oved Avi. Why are you going to this thing about Lavan? What are you bringing out Lavan? Because it's all part of the same protection. It's all part of what happened through Esav, through Lavan, and then continuing through Yosef. But our problems begin, where Rivka can't help us, is when we're bad to each other. When it's not that Para wanted to hurt Yosef, when the brothers wanted to hurt Yosef. When we aren't good to each other, that's when this protection of Rivka begins to break down. That's why he also adds the Gra. That's why she's crying on the way, right? Rachel Mavaka al-Benot, she's crying for her kids. She's crying not for the loss, but for the way they are to each other. When we're not good to each other, that's what she's crying for. Okay, let's continue. Let's move along. We continue for Vihi She'amda. Right, we say Vihi She'amda, it says lift up your cup of wine, and we say Vihi She'amda, that it stood for us. How does wine stand for us? What did wine ever do for us? Right? This has stood for us. Why did it stand for us? So perhaps we can suggest the following. If Lot never drank that wine, if Lot never got drunk, he never would have been with his daughters. If he wouldn't have been with his daughters, we never would have got to Ruth. If we never would have got to Ruth, we're never going to get to King David. If we're never going to get to King David, we're never going to get to Shlomo. If we're never going to get to Shlomo, we're never going to get to the Melech HaMashiach. Vehi Shamda. This cup stands for us. Meaning as rough and tough as this wine gets us in trouble sometimes, it stands for us times. Vehi Shamda. Okay, let's continue. Let's continue, yeah. All right, this comes from the new, they put out last year, a new Rav Soloveitchik Haggadah. A new Rav Soloveitchik Haggadah. So it says, Vayiru Osanu HaMitzrim. Vayiru Osanu HaMitzrim. So what does it mean? It usually is translated, if you look in most Haggadahs, that the Egyptians did evil to us. Egyptians did evil to us. The Yerushalayim, they did bad by us. So Rav Soloveitchik points out that the grammatical form here is imperfect. If that's what it meant, it would have said, Vayareu lanu. Vayarehu lanu. They did bad to us. Vayareu lanu. So what's it saying? So Vayiru Otanu, what's the Otanu mean? The Otanu instead, if you want to make it simple for you, why does it say Otanu instead of Lanu? Lanu would mean that they did bad to us. Vayiru Lanu, they did bad by us, to us. Vayiru Otanu means, he says what it means is they did the worst thing. Not that the Egyptians did evil to us, but they made us do evil as well. They made us do terrible things. And Rav Soloveitchik says like this, and this really strikes a chord. They accused the Jews of being disloyal fifth colonists, of plotting rebellion. The Egyptians offended doubly. They caused the Jews to suffer, and then they robbed them of their good name. That's anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is not just the bad that people do to hurt Jews, but it's the bad name that comes with the anti-Semitism as well. It's the besmirching of the Jewish name. That's what it means. Vayiru Osanu, that they did it to us. Not they did it to us. They caused us. They brought badness upon us. That's a beautiful read of that piece. Okay, let's continue along. Okay, here, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, from the Chabad Haggadah. Okay, from the Chabad Haggadah.
Did they make us do bad things, or just they gave us a bad name?
The way I thought he was going the direction of they make us do bad, but I think it's Vayiru Osanu, they made us bad. It means they made us bad. Whether that means they made us do bad things.
Not to be the bad guy.
Yeah, but you could take the Vort the other way if you want. They made us do bad things as well. You could do like an SS type thing. You could do like an SS type thing.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm not sure which one the Rav.
Okay.
Va'achshav kervanu b'makom avodoso. And they want us to throw babies in there. Okay. Now, God. It says God brought us close to worshiping God. Va'achshav kervanu b'makom avodoso. God brought us close to worshiping Him. Okay. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, "What do you mean va'achshav? And now?" What do you mean? And now God has brought us close to worship. So God says, gotta be careful. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that this is something that already occurred in the time of Avraham. This is already something that was back then. The concept of Avraham bringing people close to worshiping God. So I'll read for you from this is on the Sicha of the second night of Pesach. He says like this. Idol worship may seem like a concept that is foreign to our modern lives. His question is really, now God took us away from idolatry. We got rid of idolatry a long time ago. What now I got rid of idolatry? Meaning, how do we relate to this line in 2011 that God took us out of idolatry? We haven't done idolatry in years. So this is the answer he gives. Idol worship may seem like a concept that's foreign to our modern lives, but in truth, a mistake not dissimilar from that of the idol worshippers can easily be made in our own business activities. People of old may have worshipped the sun and the moon, but don't we worship our jobs and our clients? Don't we make the mistake of imagining market forces as working independently from God? Just as there was a need to see the sun and the moon as tools of God, an axe in the hand of the chopper, likewise we should see the marketplace as nothing other than a divine tool by which God and God alone provides our sustenance. So therefore comes the need to rid ourselves of idolatry, to mention that now God takes us away, to remember that we don't worship anything besides God. When we turn everything in our lives into idolatry, that's when the problem begins. Someone pointed out a great line. There's nothing in the Torah about not believing in God. That's as though it's secondary. What's worse is when you believe in other gods. That's worse. You hear that? There's a deep word to that. Not believing in God, okay, that's one level. But Torah makes a big deal, not about that, makes a big deal about doing Avodah Zarah, about other gods, turning everything else into a god. That's the big problem. Okay, let's continue. This comes again from the Lekach V'Levuv. Once again, the Lekach V'Levuv. He says like this. Shamati, I heard Sha'amar B'Shasa Seder, B'Shem Svarim. I heard they quoted the Seder in the name of many Svarim. Sha'kavanahi Sha'ase Otanu Lanashim Rayim. They made us be bad. He says straight out. Va'amru Aleinu She'yesh Lanu Machshav Asrael Dvarim Rayim. And they said about us that we have evil and wicked plans that were out, right? Hava Nischakba. Let's think wisely what to do with this Jewish problem. They're going to have plans for us. We got to get rid of them. So he says, Yesh bedvarim elu dvarim amukim. There are very deep ideas behind this idea. He says, Paro harasha, Paro the wicked, who comes from the shell of Tuma, knew that he needs to weaken Bnei Yisrael by weakening their resolve and their hope. Then you could beat them. So how do you get the Jews to give up? Lachein ratza lahachnis behem yeyush. If I get them to give up, how? Sheyechshavu al atzmam sheimash. If they believe that they themselves are terrible people, you could tie that then with the Rav Soloveitchik quote from before. What's the devastation of making us out to be bad? Let them say whatever they want about us, because the second we buy into it, that's when we become weak. Umameilek far avdalahem atikva, and that's when we lose our hope. When you see Jews attacking themselves for being immoral, Israel's response is too harsh. Israel's response. When that begins to happen, that chips away at the psyche of the Jewish people. When we're down on ourselves. So he says, and that's when the line from Pirkei Avos, the second chapter, 13th Mishnah, Al tihi Rasha bifnei atzmecha. Don't make yourself out to be a Rasha. Don't turn yourself into a Rasha. V'kachi darko shel yetzer. That's how the yetzer works. The yetzer gets you to give up on the future by thinking that you're worthless. You're a nobody. You're nothing significant to the world. On the contrary, you cause more harm than help. Okay. Let's continue. This comes from the... we had here in the shul 2 years ago, the Koyden of a Rebbe. So the Koyden of a Rebbe said the following. So the following idea. He says, he quotes from the name of his great-grandfather, who was the Stoliner Rebbe. He says, Mi she'enu maharher b'tshuva b'zeh halayla, whoever does not have thoughts of tshuva on this night, it's a sign that they're from one of those ma'osam anashim that died in the 3 days of darkness, right? Some Jews died in the 3 days of darkness. He said, if you can't feel anything at the Seder night, if you can't have a will, not feel, move, but at least have a will to want to make some changes in your life on the Seder night, it means you probably died out there in the 3 days of darkness. You're dead inside. Powerful line. He says, what's the explanation of my great-grandfather's line? The explanation is, Ketzad yitachen she'ein liyehudei hirhor tshuva. How could someone not have any movement on this holy night? That's only because of one reason. Mipnei hayeyush. You must have given up a while ago. Hayinu shemitbonen ba'atzmo. You probably thought to yourself that how many siddarim have passed? Kama v'kama siddarim. V'adayin lo pol ba'atzmo shina ma'asil tova. And nothing has essentially changed me for good. Ma'lo lo kedushah. What does this night have to do with anything? What am I going to accomplish on this night? They don't believe they can come out of anything. You could tie that nicely with the Russia. The Russia says, "Ma avodah zos lachem." What are you doing? It's useless. I've done that. I've been here the Seder every year. I come out no different. You come out no different. We're the same shlemazels after the Seder. That's the idea that you don't believe that you could change in a moment. You don't believe that Yeshua Hashem Kerafayan. Everything could change in the blink of an eye. Okay, let's continue. Okay, the world. All right. I think we just stopped for a second. Now, let's go now to Ilu Kirvan Livnei Har Sinai Velod Lasin Lanos the Torah Dayenu. If you would have brought us before Har Sinai and you didn't give us the Torah, Dayenu. So Rav Yerucham Levavitz, who was the Mashkiach in the Mir, Mashkiach, right? He was the Mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva, right? If you would have brought us before Har Sinai and not given us the Torah, Dayenu, would have been enough. Why enough? Why would that have been enough? So you'll see in the bottom of every art scroll, Haggadah, the perfume Dvar Torah. It's like going to a perfume shop, even though you didn't buy any perfume, you still smell good. That's not what he says. He says, why? He says, you know how much preparation we had to do to receive that Torah? We were ready for Har Sinai. We were prepared. We stood there beforehand, getting ready, getting into the mindset. It was being, imagine the speeches that were given right before to get us all ready for it. The most important part of Har Sinai wasn't necessarily the receiving of the Torah, was the preparation to receive the Torah. And he says, that's why we count the Sfiras HaOmer from Pesach to Shavuos. We're preparing for receiving the Torah. Once you get there, you get there. But Judaism is not about the destination. Judaism is about the journey. And therefore, that's how we say, Dayenu. It would have been enough, because just preparing to receive Torah, we would have walked away with some important and significant skills, some significant power in our lives. Okay, let's continue. We say Pesach, the three main things you have to say at the Seder, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. Now, this is the most important time to talk at the Seder, Pesach and Matzah, Maror. The problem is, at this point, people are starving. This is right at the point you're getting close to the meal. But I would make it a point to say everyone was stopping, because this is the most important part of the Seder. You should have quieted the cousins down from singing the whole time. This is where we should be talking. So Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So it says Pesach first, then Matzah, and only afterwards Maror. Don't we always say you start with the bitter first, like so you can build up? Start with the Maror so you can build up Pesach and then Matzah. Amazing! What an amazing feeling. Why are we starting with the Pesach, happy, Matzah even better, and then we go to Maror, the bitter? Why in that order? Okay, why are we going into that order? Says the Chedushe Harim, the Ger Rebbe, says as follows. He says that you can't appreciate, you're about to have the matzah very soon, you can't appreciate what that's like. The opposite. That's the classic stuff. Ger Rebbe says like this. You don't understand the darkness, the bitterness of what you went through, unless for a moment you sample some of the light. You need to sample some of the good life in order to appreciate how bitter things were in Egypt. That's the pshat in the pasuk, Vahotseisi eschem mitachas sivlos mitzrayim. I took you out of the bondage of Egypt. What's the sivlos mitzrayim? Says the Ger Rebbe. This is a famous parsha Dvar Torah. The idea there is, God took us out of the numb feeling that we had already felt, that This is life. Isn't this what life's supposed to be? They didn't realize how bitter things had become anymore because they became inured to the pain. They became used to that this is what life is supposed to be like. This is the way a Jew lives, and that's it. So we take it. What happens is you can only appreciate that darkness is if you first take a little discussion about the Pesach and the Matzah. That reminds me of Dvar Torah from the Kotzker Rebbe. The Kotzker Rebbe, when talking about the Gemara in Beitza, Tez Zayin Amid Aleph, when talking about how on Shabbos we're given a Neshama Yesera, right? We're given an extra soul on Shabbos. So the Gemara says as follows. Neshama Yesera was given by God Erev Shabbos, and on Motzei Shabbos it was taken away. And the Gemara says, what's the source? Because it says, Shabbos Vayi Nofash. Since Sheshavas vai of the nefesh. Once you begin Shabbos, you lose that soul. That's the literal translation. So the Kotzker Rebbe says something's wrong here. You take this literally. What it means is, at the beginning of Shabbos, God takes away the neshama yisera and then gives it back to us, right? Because it says Sheshavas. Once you have a Shabbos, vai of the nefesh. You lose the nefesh. You lose it. So it's like God takes it away and then gives it back to you. So the Kotzker Rebbe says, why? On the contrary, once Shabbos begins, that's when we should get it. So the Kotzker Rebbe says, it's taken away for a few minutes at the beginning of Shabbos so that we appreciate the whole week, the way we lived. We're only going to appreciate how we lived the whole week. Once you take it away, once you're given it and then taken away, you can then experience how dark it really was for you this past week. And then you could live with the joy of Shabbos again. Then you're ready to experience it and feel that light, that feel that light coming in. Okay, let's continue. Let's go now to Korech, the sandwich. Okay, we go now the Korech sandwich. This comes from the Haggadah Masuk Ha'or. It's a new Haggadah that just came out this year. Literally translated, how sweet that light is. Masuk Ha'or. Okay, the Korech. Gemara in Brachos 60a. Right? Just for background, by the way. Hillel is the one. Hillel is the one who made the sandwich. It's called the Hillel sandwich, where you put the matzah and the mar together. So why is Hillel the author of the Korech sandwich? So this is what it says in the Haggadah Masuk Ha'or. There's a story where Hillel was on the road in Brachos 68, and he heard crying in the city. And he said, I'm sure this isn't from my home. This can't be from my home, this crying, this screaming that's going out in the city. So the Gemara asks, how did Hillel know this? So the Gemara answers, because Kol da'avid rachmana latava avid, that Hillel lived his life believing that everything is for the good. Everything must be for the good, meaning bad could happen. It could still be them screaming. No, because he taught his whole family, that's how we live. No matter what happens, everything is for the good. It's a very high level. Everything, Kol da'avid rachmana latava avid, everything that happens is for the good. If there was crying about something in the city, it's not coming from the Hillel family. Because we don't cry about those things, right? There's no crying in baseball here. We behaved over here. So it can't be us. That's why Hillel made the sandwich of matzah and mar eating together. Why? To show us that the good and the bad mixed together are both for the good. And that's why you make a bracha even on it while you have the bad there. It's all kol da'avid rachmana latava avid. That's a fabulous one in my opinion. All right. Next, this is on the Shulchan Aruch, on the meal. Okay. This is from, I saw in a Haggadah, I also knew Haggadah came out. It's called the Ma'ayan HaMoed, the Wellsprings of the Festival, page 327. The Rebbetzin of the Kretschnifer. Okay, it's a Rebbe. If you haven't heard that one yet, the someone on our shul is related to the Kretschnifer Rebbe. So the Rebbetzin of Kretschnif used to work so hard to cook for Pesach. And her husband, the great Rebbe, Rabbi Meir of Kretschnif, said to her, why are you working so hard? Right? So much work to make all these dishes, your fancy dishes you're preparing. So much work for, I don't know how they make those three-level gefilte fishes, how much work gets put into that. Just to get, for something that goes from, the benefit lasts from lips to the throat. Just put the ingredients on the table, and I'll mix it together in my stomach. You don't have to work so hard and put all the ingredients on the table, and I'll mix it in my stomach. So this is the concluding point, the takeaway point of the story. Says the Haggadah, Mayan HaMoed, the common reader of Jewish thought would think the point of the story is we should limit our connection to the physical world. Limit Gashmias. That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is how worried Rav Meir of Kretschnif was for his wife. That's the point of the story. The point was not to limit Gashmias. The point, of course, no one enjoys having salt here, this there, that here. But he was worried how much his wife had to work. All right, a beautiful way to look at the story. Now let's go over. What? You'll find out. Second Seder. All right. Okay. Here we go. So this comes from the meal. We're talking about the Shulchan Aruch, the meal, right? So much of the night was involved in using the mouth, telling the story. Haggadah means to speak. Sipur means to talk. Says Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Great-great-grandfather of somebody in this room. By serving the functions of eating and of speech, the mouth, as it were, constitutes the bond of reconciliation between the spiritual and the elements, animal elements within man. The meal, therefore, was designated by the sages as the first step towards the ennoblement of the animal in man. This is the function of the Seder, to ennoble us. We had become animals. They turned us into slaves, mamish into behemoths, the way they treated us. And the Seder begins the process of evolution, of coming out of that. And that's why the night focuses on your mouth. The mouth is the most animalistic place. That's the place where all the eating is done, the consumption, the biting, the attacking to hurt someone. Tonight we use our mouth for Torah, we use our mouth for brachas, we use our mouth to elevate that which is there in this world. It's the beginning of becoming a human. That ties into another Dvar Torah we said a couple years ago, why the Mishkan. If you look at the Mishkan, it's described in all body parts. every single piece of the Mishkan. It says the arms of the Mishkan, the legs, the rib cage of the Mishkan, the fingers of the Mishkan. It's the way it's configured. What is that? So the point is because it's supposed to look like a human being. Because the Mishkan comes at this process, this time, when we're coming out of Egypt and we're learning how to build the human being up again. How to become a mensch. How to become a human, a functioning human in society who could contribute. We're building ourselves up. That ties in also with the famous Dvar Torah of the Sefer Achinuch, who says why the offering on Pesach was animal fodder. And if you look at the offering on Shavuos, it's human food, right? It's the Shtei Alechem, it's bread. Right? So why the difference? It's because it's the evolution. We're going from becoming animals to becoming human beings again. We're learning to evolve. Okay. What? Oh, beautiful. Michael Behema to Michael Adam. Carbos, right? The vegetables, the vegetation of the ground over to matzah delation. Then that goes against the Vartar at the beginning, which raises the karpa. But okay, everyone has their own Vartar. Good. Beautiful. Beautiful thought. Okay, next. Why is the Afikomen called Tzafon? Why is the Afikomen called Tzafon? You get to that part in the Seder, Tzafon means hidden. So why is the Afikomen called hidden? So the Svarim HaKadoshim, the Holy Svarim say, Pesach is a time to bring great Shefa, influence from above, for Parnassa. As we say, it's not a Hasidic idea, it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah 16a. Pesach Nidonim Ala Tvua, that God judges how much produce you're going to have on Pesach. On Pesach. So what's then the connection? So the time that's the appropriate time for daven for that parnasa, that's at the time of the afikomen. That's the time when you daven for parnasa. How do we know that? So the pasuk in Iyov says, "Mitzafon zahav yaseh." From the tzafon, your gold will come. From the tzafon, that's when your gold will come. And also you have a gemara in Bava Basra 25b. Harotzeh shiashir yatzpin. Whoever wants to become rich, yatzpin. What is yatzpin? From tzafon. The Afikomen, that's your master skula. And that could, by the way, based on that, I was thinking that could be the basis for the Afikomen presents. Where'd this start from with the Afikomen presents because of the Afikomen? You want to give gifts to wake the kids up, so you give them gifts. What's it tied into the Afikomen? Because the Afikomen is a skula for Parnassa. And therefore, you're giving gifts. You're saying, I have confidence that I could spend a little money on people in the family. I don't have to worry that it's not going to come back to me. Okay, next, let's continue. We're almost done with the whole Seder. Okay. Okay, this comes from Rav Nevinsal's Haggadah. Rav Nevinsal's the chief rav of Yerushalayim. Holy Rav Nevinsal, one of the main students of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So we say afterwards by the, when we open the door, we say, Shvoch hamascha ala goyim, Shvoch hamascha, pour out your wrath unto the goyim. Right? I spoke about this a little bit on Shabbos, and he undoes what I suggested Shabbos. I suggested on Shabbos as a defense for why we say that, is for how many years we had the blood libels. And when a Jew opens their door on Pesach, how afraid they always were. And they prayed to God when they opened that door, Shvach HaMascha. So he says, there are some who say, why do we say this? Because of the Alilas Dam, because of the blood libels. L'chein mevakshim anam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we daven to God to protect us from the wicked, those who try to hurt us. He says, well, I'll tell you why that can't be true. I got to publish a retraction. Amnam kvar besider Rav Amram Gon. I already found this line in the Siddur of Rav Amram Gon, which came out before there ever was a blood libel. The first blood libel we believe is 1125. So the Siddur of Amram Gon has the line before there was a blood libel. So he points that out. So he says, therefore it has to be something else. So he says, after we finish this night, we say that we were zoche for this Seder. Now we did the Chasal Seder Pesach Kehil Chasal. That's the last line. It says Chasal Seder, that thank God we did the Pesach Seder appropriately. Okay. So now, he says, why would we bring that up? You're just opening yourself up to criticism. You did the Pesach Seder right? You didn't even bring the Pesach offering, the main part of the Seder. The Korban Pesach you didn't bring. What are you so proud that we Jews did it right? Right? You did nothing right. You didn't do the Korban Pesach. So he says, based on all that, he says the following. L'chein omrim umavakshim anu makadosh baruch hu. Therefore we daven to God. Shvoch hamascha l'gayim. Leimor to say, lo aleinu lavo l'bitrono al shalikran akor pesach. Let them not come against us with a complaint that you Jews aren't even the real Jews. That's what I got on the subway 2 weeks ago on the number 2 train. Someone screaming at me that you Jews aren't the real Jews. A student of Farrakhan said, we're the real Jews, you're not the real Jews. You shouldn't have someone coming screaming at you, saying with a claim that you didn't even do what you're supposed to be doing. Ela al hagoyim tzarech lishpoch kazeh. If there's any shortcomings, don't put it on us. We try to do the best we can. We didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. We're not the ones who burnt it down. They burnt it down. Meaning, if you want to come to us and say, you know, you Jews, you had a nice Seder, God says, but you didn't even do the Korban Pesach. We ask that you don't get mad at us for that. We would love to do the Korban Pesach. Get mad at those people. They're the ones who burnt the thing down and didn't want us to do the Korban Pesach. Creative approach to that problem. Okay, let's go now to the Hallel. The Hallel. We say in the Mayan HaMoed HaGadah, page 379, we say, HaShemayim Shemayim LaShem, the heaven is God, Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam, and the earth was given to us. The earth was given, Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. Kotzker Rebbe has such a nice line on that line. You can think about this anytime you say Hallel. Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. The heaven is God's, and the earth is the humans. Ha'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam, to turn it into Shemayim. God has the earth, He gave us the land so that we could take the land and turn it into heaven. That's the job. That's our job here. And the Mayan HaMoed HaGadah says that fits beautifully with the Maral, who says, take the word behema. What's a behema as an animal? What's behema mean? Take it apart. It's ba-ma, in it. Meaning its whole purpose is already there. It's there to walk around, graze, eat a little bit, move from one place to the other. That's it. Move around. Ba-ma. Everything you're going to get is already what it is what it is. It's already in there. Okay? He says, but what's the name for a human? Is the Maral. What's the name for a human? Human is Adam, because that's potential. Why is Adam potential? Adam means Adama, the ground. Ground is all potential. Anything, you can make anything grow from it. That's Adama, that's potential. And that fits nicely with the Kotzker. Va'aretz nasan livnei Adam. Man was given the Adama to make it into Shemayim, to take the ground and make it and to turn it into something. Okay, we're closing up. Here we go. Now to the Kos Shel Eliyahu. Let's take the cup of Elijah. This is in the Gedola Yisrael Haggadah, the cup of Elijah. We say that the four cups of wine are parallel to the four expressions of redemption. Right? I will take you out, I will save you, I'll redeem you, and I took you. Now, we pour a fifth cup parallel to Eliyahu HaNavi, for Eliyahu Navi. Why is it called Eliyahu Navi? So says the Vilna Gaon. You get another Vilna Gaon here. Ha'im tzrichin kos chamishi v'lo ifsik kehilchasok shiavo Eliyahu b'mehir amenu yevar v'yishalanu gam et asafik hazeh. The Gemara has a machlokas in Psachim 118b whether or not you need a fifth cup. There's a machlokas whether or not you need a fifth cup. That's why it's called the cup of Elijah. It's such a simple answer. It's brilliant. Everyone gives fancy answers. The Gemara is unsure whether there was supposed to be a fifth cup. Why? Because it says, Vehevesi, and I'll bring you into the land. We're not sure. It's a machlokas. Put the cup on the table. Who's the one who always answers the questions in the Gemara that are unresolved? Teku. Who's Teku? Eliyahu Anavi. That's why it's called Elijah's cup, because he's going to tell us whether or not you needed this cup in the first place. I don't know why no one thought of that. All right, very good. Now, what? Gemara is in Psachim Kuf Yud Chesem Beis, 118b. What? Yeah. Now, we say at the end of the Seder, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. A friend of mine sent over his notes in the Haggadah. His name is Rav Yechiel Weberman. He lives in Far Rockaway. And he sent over his Dvar Torah. And he wrote in there, heard from Chesky Kopel. So I don't know who Chesky Kopel is, but that's the Dvar Torah. Chesky Kopel said it. Anybody know Chesky Kopel? Raise your hand. You know Chesky? He's in Gush. Okay. Shkoyach. We have someone who knows Chesky Kopel. Anyone know Yechiel Weberman? Yeah. All right, a couple of people. All right, go ahead. All right. Now, there are two times that we say, this is so nice, there are two times that we say, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, Yom Kippur and on Pesach. Why by these two? Not only the Yontif. What's the connection between Pesach and Yom Kippur that we're saying, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim? So, why? Oh, fabulous. Chills just thinking about it. These two holidays, the primary function of the holidays are not even being done. By Yom Kippur, if you look in the Torah, it wasn't davening and fasting. It was the service of the priest, the korbanos. And we can't do it today. Look at Pesach in the Torah. How do you fulfill Pesach? With the korban Pesach. Both Yomim Tovim. By both Yomim Tovim, that's all we want. That's what we wanted to do. And therefore we say, Lashana Hava B'Yerushalayim. This is all we want at the Seder. We want the ability to be able to fulfill that. Okay, let's go to the end. Nirtza now. Closing in on the end. Shmona miyodea. Right? Eight? Who knows eight? Shmona aniyodea. I know eight. Shmona eight are the days of the Mila. So now, I raised a question last year, but did not put an answer. Okay, and when I then sent this shiur online, I got a response online with two answers to this question. Okay, the response came from a mashkiach of Yeshivat Or Yerushalayim, Rav Wagner. See, social media. Okay, there are, he says, the question is as follows. There aren't 8 days of, what do you mean? Who knows, eight are the days of circumcision. There aren't 8 days of circumcision. There's only one day. It's the eighth day. There aren't eight, but each one of them, if you look at the other one, who knows two, who knows three, there actually are that number. There's three fathers, there's four mothers. This is the only one where it says, who knows eight? Eight is the day, it's the eighth day. There's no 8 days. So what 8 days? So Rav Wagner answered as follows. It says, number one, in order for a circumcision to be a successful circumcision from the eyes of Judaism, you need to have first been someone who's uncircumcised for 7 days. You need to have a status in Jewish law that's called an arel. Without being an arel for 7 days, you can't do the bris milah yet. You need 7 days of being an arel. Avraham needed to be an arel in order to get the commandment to do circumcision. So it is really 8 days. Who knows eight? Eight are the days because the first 7 days are essential component to the eighth day. That's his first answer. His second answer was based on a medrash of why do we wait 7 days and then bring a korban? In Parshas Emor, and why do we wait 7 days and then bring a bris and then have the bris milah after someone gives birth? Why do we wait 7 days and then do the bris milah? So the Medrash says, because you need to pass a Shabbos. If you want to see me, says God, you need to see my matrona. You need to see my, you know, my special chief that I made, and that's Shabbos. Meaning the week itself was integral to the bris, to make sure that you get those 8 days in, so you always hit a Shabbos, you always pass through it, that's essential. And I close with the following. RL is the uncircumcised one. I close with the following.
So it's not a spiritual state, it's just so.
It could be both. There's both languages in the Torah, but it's referring to the physical. Oh, that too. That's not the Medrash. That's Rashi. That's not the Medrash. Good. Chagadya. Okay, Chagadya. It's interesting, just hit me last year. Chagadya, that the word Gadya is similar to what other word on this night? Right? Chagadya is one goat. The goat that bit the get, the bit the. What's Gadya similar to when you think about it?
Haggadah,
right? So what is it? Chagadya. There's one Haggadah. Meaning, we all come from different places. We all have different stories. We all have different backgrounds. Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Bukharian, German, Hungarian, we all have different backgrounds. But at the end of the day, it's basically one story. It's Chagadya. It's one telling. It's that same story that we're telling in each and every home. The details, there may be a different word, slight word here or there, but the story is basically the same everywhere we are. And that's an empowering idea when you come to the Seder, that you're tapping into a story that everyone's been telling in Jewish homes. The most, by the way, the Seder is the most celebrated Jewish observance, more than Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's the most celebrated Jewish observance, is the Pesach Seder. You're doing something that has been told and done in the same way for so many years, so many homes, from people from so many backgrounds. All right, Shikoch, everyone have a happy Chag Sameach.